Attorney General Robert Kennedy, here are the issues. Are the Cuban refugees now a security problem? Will you, as Attorney General, take any stronger steps to enforce civil rights in the South? What can be done about the nation's rising crime rate? You've heard the issues. Now for the answers from the Honorable Robert F. Kennedy, the Attorney General of the United States, and the close confidant of his brother, the President. Here to interview the Attorney General are ABC commentator Edward P. Morgan, and with the first question, ABC White House correspondent Bill Lawrence.
Mr. Attorney General, would it be your present intention to serve out the full first term of your brother as Attorney General?
Yes.
Or, well, if that is the case, what would you do in 1964 insofar as your own personal political activity is concerned in connection with his reelection campaign?
Well, I have no plans other than to be Attorney General. That's subject to change, of course, but at the present time I have no plans other than to continue as Attorney General.
Mr. Attorney General, still in this wide area of politics, I suppose it should be said that every administration invites a good deal of flack from the opposition. But you, as Attorney General, seem to have invited it as an individual more than a lot of other people. The right wing, so-called, has criticized you very severely as a moral crusader for the Justice Department's stand on civil rights in the South. Business has felt in the past that you were a little harsh. What is your comment on these various criticisms aimed at you?
Well, I think it's difficult for me, really, to comment. You know, I think that anybody's going to have to look at the record and make their own decisions, and I think that there obviously has been a good deal of criticism about it, but I think that outsiders are better qualified to determine how the record stands than perhaps I am.
Were you surprised at all at the persistence of these, I won't call them attacks, but these criticisms of you in these various areas?
No, I don't think so. I'm not overwhelmed by it. I'm aware of it. But I expect I'll survive it all.
I don't want to belabor the point because we want to get along to a lot of other things. But in this same general area, you more than anybody else are aware of the fact that some people have accused you of a personal vendetta against Mr. Hoffa. Do you have any comment on that?
No, I'd say first, I don't think it could be less important what I think of Mr. Hoffa or what he thinks of me. I think that it's a question whether there is a violation of law, whether a grand jury makes an investigation determines this is a violation of law. We've had some investigations of Mr. Hoffa and some of his associates within the Teamsters Union. Arises out of the hearings that we held in the McClellan Committee, which I was counsel. Since I've been Attorney General, some 55 Teamster officials and associates of Mr. Hoffa have been convicted. A number of others are still under indictment. Mr. Hoffa is under indictment at the present time. I wouldn't have any comment about him personally. I would say that I have a responsibility to fulfill. If we determine that there is a violation of law, whether it's by Mr. Hoffa or by anybody else, those matters are going to be presented to a grand jury and ultimately to a petty jury. And then it's up to the jury and the judge to make a decision. But I think that's my responsibility. And what I think of Mr. Hoffa, as I say, or what he thinks of me, I don't think could be less important. I'm Attorney General, and I have a responsibility to fulfill, and I expect and plan to fulfill it and meet that obligation.
Mr. Attorney General, after about 2.5 years in the job, dealing with these problems of corruption or law violation in the labor management field and in many other fields, do you feel the need for any new tools, any new weapons with which you can fight crime?
Well, I think that the legislation that we had passed last year has been extremely helpful. There were 8 bills, as I'm sure you know, and that was the first time there's been any legislation in this field for 30 years. There's been a great deal of talk about organized crime, and there's articles been written and hearings been held, but that's really been all that there has been. And I think that the legislation that was passed with bipartisan support, Republicans and Democrats in Congress, has been extremely helpful. It's greatly broadened the jurisdiction of the FBI. And I think the efforts that we have made to coordinate all the various investigative groups of the federal government, who before were acting somewhat independently, I think that's been extremely important. And the establishment of an intelligence unit, within the federal government to try to learn as much information about these individuals as possible. The same way we studied the work and the activities of the leaders of the Communist Party. I think that's been helpful. I think for the future we've made certain suggestions as far as legislation. I think the wiretapping bill that has been requested would be extremely helpful in meeting the problems of crime throughout the United States. I realize that this is a red flag for many people, but I think if anybody examines and studies the legislation that we have suggested and recommended in this field, that they will find that it tightens up the situation as it presently exists. There are many loopholes in the law regarding wiretapping at the present time. I think if this legislation is passed, it will tighten those loopholes, put them out of existence, as well as giving the federal government certain tools in order to deal with espionage, sabotage, and organized crime. I think if that legislation is passed, I think that you'll will make a major, it'll be a major battle won against crime in the United States.
Well, do you feel the need for any new tools to enforce the constitutional guarantee of equal rights in the racial...
Civil rights?
Yes.
Well, I think probably the most important area, in my judgment at least, and I don't know that there are others who feel differently, but in my judgment, the most important area is in the field of voting, that all of our citizens can exercise their franchise. I think if they can exercise their franchise, if they can register and vote in elections, that they can frequently remedy their problems themselves in their own areas. Now, we have a number of states in the United States where less than 5% of our Negroes are registered and vote in elections. We have a number of counties in the South where Negroes outnumber white people, and yet not one Negro is registered to vote. We've made a concerted drive to permit individuals to register and to vote where there is discrimination. We have found that white people who have completed the second grade come in and are given a test by a registrar and are declared literate and allowed to register and to vote. A college professor follows right after this white person who has completed college, perhaps a degree, a postgraduate degree, comes in, he teaches college, and he's given a test, the same test, and he's declared illiterate. This is an effort to keep Negroes from registering and participating in election. We made a major drive against that. But we do not have all the tools that are necessary. And the President has recommended to Congress the passage of certain other legislation, which will be very helpful, will expedite these cases and make it far easier in our efforts to permit everybody to register and to vote.
General, on this precise subject, the developments in Mississippi and Alabama, particularly in just recent weeks and days, have not been very encouraging. What's your assessment of progress there?
Well, I wouldn't agree with you completely. It hasn't been very encouraging. I think that there are problems, and we're going to have these kind of difficulties, in my judgment, for the next decade. You're going to have them in Alabama, Mississippi, and you're going to have them in Chicago, as we've had them in the last few days, too, in all parts of the United States. This is not a problem that is confined to one section of our country. I think there's a good deal of discrimination and prejudice that exists in the North that's perhaps more subtle and but sometimes even more sinister than it exists in some places in the South.
Are there new tools in this field that would be useful in enforcing compliance?
As I say, I think the major area should be in the field of registration of voters and the permission allowing Negroes as well as white people to participate in elections. I think that will have a major influence within the state. And I think the understanding by Mississippi and their officials that we're going to enforce the law, that everybody must be treated equally as far as their voting rights are concerned, and then as far as education is concerned and in any of these other areas, as far as federal programs are concerned, that there can't be any discrimination between whites and Negroes. And I think that's been made clear, but that we're going to do all in our power, the federal government, to enforce the law of the land. And I think that we're going to continue to make progress. Now, it's not going to be remedied overnight, and we can't come up with any quick solution, any more than we come up with and can come up with a quick solution about Cuba or Berlin or Southeast Asia. I don't think that or unemployment. I don't think these things are subject to quick solution. And like all of these other matters, we keep looking around for something that will be a panacea and give us the immediate solution. I don't think that's what the situation warrants.
Mr. Attorney General, one of the areas that the Department of Justice has to be constantly involved in is that of possible mergers and alleged monopolies. Have the developments in the steel industry regarding prices and the development in the transportation industry regarding mergers or possible mergers, airlines and railroads, confronted the Department of Justice with any new duties in terms of following these situations, or what is your reaction to these situations as they now stand?
Well, I think they're two different industries. When we talk about transportation, I think that there's we have a tremendous problem of the 1960s, what we're going to do about transportation. You have the individual mergers, such as CNO, BNO, which is ahead of us. They've taken the first step, which ultimately probably lead to their merger. You have various airlines. How do they affect one another? How did the BNO, CNO affect the rest of the railroad systems? How do the American Eastern affect the rest of the airlines? How do the mergers in airlines affect the railroads? What's going to happen as far as the trucking industry is concerned? What really is needed is that we look at each merger individually, but we also look at what its impact is going to be on the rest of the industry and what its impact is going to be on transportation as a whole. I think that's what's required during the 1960s, and I think we're getting around to that. But I think that's the greatest problem that is facing us in this whole area. I don't think any longer we can just look at a merger from an antitrust point of view, just as that individual merger. But I think we have to look at it as how it affects the whole area itself. As far as steel is concerned, obviously the impact that this industry has on the rest of the economy is a matter of concern to us. We have looked into a number of cases of price fixing involving steel. About a year ago, we came in with an indictment, and a number of the major steel companies then pled nolo contendere, didn't contend the charges of the federal government. Several weeks ago, we came into with another indictment for price fixing involving a number of the steel companies, and that will be litigated. Beyond that, it's the impact that the steel companies have on the economy as a whole. And that matter requires our continued interest. We're not against, and can't be, against bigness per se, but we are against, under the law, this country, against monopoly, and we have to examine this subject continuously.
Pushing the problem of bigness into a slightly different area of business, what are the problems that arise facing you and your department that grow out of such an investigation as Senator McClellan is having on the TFX airplane contract? Is it likely that an investigation of this kind would come up with recommendations for legislation involving contracts that the Justice Department might have to interest
itself in? Well, I haven't heard of any wrongdoing charged in that matter, so I doubt very much if we'd have anything to do with it.
Mr. Attorney General,
nothing has been referred to our attention, at least as of the present time.
To turn to another field in which you as Attorney General have had an important role, which is Cuba. There was last week the resignation of Miguel Cardona and the exchange of charges between Washington and Miami. What does this do to the whole Cuban exile picture? How do you get the pieces back together again of some kind of a unified front to deal with this government on this problem?
Well, I think that exchange and the actions probably last week do nothing but strengthen Castro and communism in Cuba. So I think it's unfortunate, and I think Dr. Cardona recognizes this. I think he has been in a difficult position. The Cuban colony frequently has been split. It's been split on him. It's been split on the council. It's been split amongst one another. Everyone wants the liberation of Cuba, the return of Cuba to Cubans. but everybody has a different idea as to how it should be accomplished. So I think that's difficult. I think that the most important thing that could be accomplished is some unification of the Cuban refugees with some kind of a system that you would have the Cuban refugees speak through one voice or a group of voices. Either elect amongst themselves their own leader or their own group of leaders, and then have some relationship with the United States and with other countries. But I think that one of the great weaknesses has been the fact that they have been so split amongst one another. The bitterness between the Cuban groups has been so bitter frequently that it's been difficult to have any meaningful discussions or conversations. And I think if a first major step that needs to be taken is some unification amongst the Cubans, the Cuban groups, so that the United States government and other governments, which are interested in their cause, because our cause is the same, could have some meaningful discussions and conversations which could lead to some greater accomplishments than we have in the past.
There have been some rather bitter charges in recent days that President Kennedy reneged on a promise to invade Cuba a second time and really throw Castro out. And this has caused a lot of discontent in the Cuban community. Does this in any way present any security problems for this government?
Well, as a practical matter, Mr. Lawrence, I think it's quite clear that the President of the United States is not going to call in a representative from another country and say, we're going to invade in 3 months or 6 months. That's not how anything is done here in the United States. It just doesn't make any sense that you're going to call someone in and say, we're going to invade and we're going to use six divisions. Not to inform anybody in your own country, not inform the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the Secretary of Defense or anybody else, and just announce that you're going to a representative of Cuba, that you're going to, or Cubans in Miami, that we're going to invade Cuba. It doesn't make any sense. And the second thing, you would have thought that if that had happened, that perhaps Dr. Cardona would have mentioned it to somebody else. Nobody else appeared to know about the fact that he had had this conversation. I happen to have been present during the conversation, as Dr. Cardona stated. And, of course, nothing like that ever happened. I do think that that kind of charge is unfortunate, and I think it affects the relationship. It must affect the relationship as it has existed in the past and the future relationship of the President of the United States with Dr. Cardona or with any representative.
I wasn't accepting Dr. Cardona's charges as valid, but I was suggesting that amongst the Cuban community, there are many who do. And I wondered if amongst this group, now discontented and highly dissatisfied with the president, whether this presented any security problems for this country.
I don't believe so, because I think that what they're interested in and what they're angry about is the liberation of Cuba. I don't think that they want to turn so strongly against the United States that they would cause the United States harm. I think that they're bitter about the fact, many of them, that we haven't invaded Cuba. I don't think that that bitterness has turned to the fact that they're going to commit acts of sabotage or espionage against the United States.
Not necessarily to turn that around in a slightly different direction, Mr. Kennedy. In their frustration and anger, might it be possible that they would attempt to mount, in defiance of the president's policy, more hit-and-run raids to show their defiance? And might this not complicate your security problem
somewhat?
Yes,
that does. Of course, we have instituted certain checks on that. It's possible that they could still take place, but I think it's more difficult. As the president said, on matters such as this, these should be determined by the United States, not by somebody else.
I want to ask you another question on this same general subject. Some people in the administration have charged that critics of the Kennedy administration Cuban policy have been irresponsible in their criticisms and in their charges, that they have not substantiated their charges, and that therefore some of them at least have been politically motivated. What is your reaction to these charges?
Well, I think that this is a very important issue in the United States, and rightfully so. And I think that if anybody has any ideas or thoughts as to what the solution to it might be, that should be communicated to the President or the Secretary of Defense or the Secretary of State. I think to make charges, for instance, numbers charges about how many people there are here, how many
soldiers
of Cuba
troops
have been brought into Cuba. I think that this should be where you're an important official, that there should be some substance for them. This should be some proof for them, because I think that arouses people, concerns people, disturbs people. And I think during this period, difficult period of time, difficult for the President of the United States, who's actually not just President of the Democratic Party, but President of all of our people, I think it makes his problems far more difficult. So I think that there should be some proof offered when somebody comes in and makes these kind of charges. It's the easiest thing in the world. You can get somebody who'll say almost anything from Cuba or Cuban coming out, and without analyzing what proof he might have, determine what substance there is to it. I think it's extremely dangerous to take what somebody says and then make a speech about it without any substance or proof for it. I think is a disservice to the United States and makes the president's position far more difficult.
Nevertheless, as you read the signs, do you not feel that the Republicans are going to do everything possible to make this a political issue in 64?
Yes.
Mr. Attorney General,
I would say I think it's a matter that should be discussed. I don't find any fault that it should be discussed between Republicans and Democrats and amongst Democrats, because I think that this is a major problem facing the United States. So I don't find any fault with that. But I do think it should stop at making irresponsible charges.
To turn to the domestic scene, I take it you're greatly interested in these youth employment acts which are before the Congress. What are their chances of passage, would you say?
Well, I would. I think that they are good. We had this youth act that was up last year, which permits a first 15,000 going to 50,000 of our young people who are out of school and out of work to go to CCC camps for a period of time, and then also provides a program for training within local communities of young people who have difficult times and can't find employment. I think that has a good chance of passing. We have a major problem, as you know. We have 1 million young people in the United States at the present time who are out of school and out of work. In 10 years, the situation continues as it is at the present time, we're going to have 7.5 million. And we've got to start coming up with some programs which will help those people. And I think that just to ignore this problem and act as if it doesn't exist is making a major mistake. So I think we have a good chance of getting that legislation by and signed by the President this year. I think also our domestic peace corps, domestic service corps, which the President sent up last week, has a chance of getting by. We're going to push the legislation hard, and I think that also can be extremely helpful all across the country.
Mr. Attorney General, on that hopeful note, we have to interrupt and thank you very much for being our guest on Issues and Answers.
Today's guest on Issues and Answers was the Honorable Robert F. Kennedy, Attorney General of the United States. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Whedon, a presentation of ABC News. Hear news around the world, mornings, on the ABC Radio Network.